This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It is a marketing communication, is not for forward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise. Past performance does not predict future returns, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only, and references made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security.
My name is Andrew Chiguri, and today I'm joined by Ben Lofthouse, Portfolio Manager of the Henderson International Income Trust, to talk about the market over the first half of the year, how the portfolio is positioned, what investors can learn from history about investing in volatile markets. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Ben, we did a podcast about a few months ago, just after you published your half-year results. I think that was at the end of February. However, a lot has changed since then. The odds of a recession are higher, the energy crisis has intensified, and on top of it all, we're seeing increased political uncertainty in Europe. Could you talk us through how you've navigated the market so far over the last 3 months? And, you know, what three things do you think are driving the market at the moment?
Well, I would say, you know, from a positive point of view, given all the disruption we've had in the world, the value of the fund, the net asset value of the fund, is pretty constant this year. So we haven't seen a great deal of volatility in our portfolio. And that goes to part of your question is, well, why is that? So what we've seen is that diversification has been very important in this period. So some of the defensive sectors have been performing well. Things like consumer staples, pharmaceutical companies. And so kind of in terms of having a portfolio that has some exposure to those and that isn't too overly cyclical has been beneficial. Areas like energy, you know, have been generally positive. And so, you know, within this kind of market disruption, some areas have benefited in terms of sentiment and around the supply issues. Well, if I break it down into the three kind of big things that have really changed, perhaps. One, inflation. So 3 months ago, we would be thinking inflation, I'm talking about it being transitory, and it has turned out to be less transitory than almost everyone expected. And that is feeding through to a number of things. So one, central banks are having to raise interest rates into a slowing growth environment. And that has caused quite a big, when interest rates go up, you quite often get a fall in certain parts of the market in terms of PE, price to earnings ratios. And so the US market and the expensive US technology stocks were hit by that considerably. The second part is that we're getting cost of living concerns. So we're reading about it in this country and that is being mirrored around the world. So this cost of living crisis was something that previously, 3 months ago, we would have been talking about the consumer doing quite well and getting wage increases and going out and spending post-COVID and going on holidays. People are still doing that, but now we're kind of bracing ourselves for 5 to 6 months down the line when people might, you know, are facing more pressures and things like pasta and fuel costs are going up. And so those two things have caused things like areas like the consumer discretionary stocks to sell down. And so far, we've not seen a big drop in demand, but we have seen companies that have low margins being impacted from their costs going up. And the third thing that is driving the market is obviously Russia, energy, and kind of whether Europe will sanction its energy. So really big changes, but actually the company results coming through at the moment, you know, are quite good. And if you've had a, you know, diversified portfolio, it's benefited. And also currency. So sterling had depreciated a lot, which has helped if you've had your assets overseas.
Out of those factors that you've just discussed, have they caused you to change your positioning over the last few months?
Yes, it has. We have reduced gradually this year and accelerated the reduction in some of the stocks that we think could be more cyclically impacted than people think, but where it's not reflected. So parts of the market you'll hear people say are pricing in a recession, and that's true. So some areas of the market, like chemicals and financials, have fallen very significantly, very quickly, and others had held up. So we've actually reduced some areas such as semiconductors, industrials, and consumer discretionary that we felt probably the outlook there has got worse, but the share prices don't reflect that yet. Mm-hmm. And the other thing we've done within this period is when the market first sold off, we used our gearing. So we added some exposure to the market. And then more recently, when there's been a bit of recovery, we've taken that off. So we don't have very much gearing at the moment either.
You touched on it slightly, which is exposure to the US and the tech sector. I mean, your positioning is quite different compared to some of your peers within the sector. For example, you have earned some of around 50 or 60% of their portfolio in the US and also higher tech exposure. Now you have 34% of Hint in the US. How are you investing in that market at the moment?
We've followed a couple of kind of key rules or thoughts over the last year. One is we didn't want too much exposure to companies that have really benefited the most from low interest rates because we felt there was a risk interest rates would normalize. So that, you know, for us included some areas such as US real estate and US kind of some of the more speculative technology areas and some of the US kind of stocks that benefited from pandemic the most. Yeah. So that probably versus kind of the wider market, those are the big things that we didn't have exposure to, the likes of an Amazon, a Zoom, a Netflix, are the things that we did not hold. In the US, we focused on holding things where we think they have pricing power. So what does that mean? They have some sort of brand, or they're big and they've got scale, which allows them to cope with rising inflation and costs. And so that's companies like Coca-Cola, Mondelez, which used to be Kraft, our areas, and healthcare. And so, you know, these are the types of areas that we've invested in the US, where we're not too much leverage and have pricing power and quite high margins. That's the other thing you find in these inflationary periods. Companies that have got a very low profitability find it hard if one of their costs goes up by 50%. Companies with a very high profitability, it doesn't matter so much because they've got more of a margin to take that buffer.
Though you reduce your tech exposure, you still hold companies such as Broadcom and Taiwan Semiconductor, for example. What are you hearing from them about some of the supply chain disruptions and shortages that are happening within that industry at the moment?
Yeah, we've heard that some of the shortages are easing in some areas of the market. And then in other areas of the market, it's still quite tough. So in areas like semiconductors that go into the automotive sector, there still seems to be quite tight, the supply demand for those. So there's still a bit of a problem finding the right semiconductors. I think what we're finding is people are, where they can, changing what they need. So sometimes if you can reconfigure a product to use a different semiconductor, that's okay. We're hearing instances of lots of almost finished cars and almost finished equipment sitting ready to go, but it needs a kind of vital semiconductor chip here and there. So people are carrying on with production, but they are, you know, they're building up inventory. I think we're seeing a big difference between areas like, say, communications, where we're not seeing very much cyclicality in demand, and data centers, whereas in areas like the PC market, we're seeing more signs of consumer softness. So at the moment, for the likes of the big companies like Taiwan Semiconductor, you're actually seeing, okay, maybe fewer people are mining Bitcoin, but some of that capacity is taken by somebody else who needs it for data centers or cars. Right. So we're seeing that general demand remains strong, but supply still remains constrained in some parts.
I mean, it's interesting because there seems to be some friction between the market and corporate America at the moment about what to expect in the coming months. The market, for example, is pricing in a recession, whilst in corporate America, buybacks are accelerating and earnings guidance has surprisingly moved higher. What's your take on that?
There are a few things that are driving earnings higher. Part of that for the aggregate market are areas like the energy sector, which obviously is seeing higher energy prices, higher gas prices than were expected, and that's feeding through to upgrades. We're seeing actually areas like financial services are seeing some benefit from higher interest rates. They're not yet seeing customers struggle, so we're not seeing an increase in impairments. And some people might say yet, but they're not seeing it. So I think what you often find is analysts won't put this into the figures until they see it later down the line. And in the meantime, what the share prices do is they fall to reflect that uncertainty. We are seeing, I think people forget that moderate inflation is quite often positive for companies, because your top line, your revenue growth, is a product of how much you sell and the price you sell it for. And the ability for you to put up prices is harder in a very low inflationary environment. So actually, for an, for a lot of companies over the last decade, very low inflation has been quite hard because they've had costs that are going up, like wage costs or the cost of investing, you know, for technology. Many of us, the businesses we work in, you know, there are more people employed rather than less people employed a decade ago. But actually, in some cases, there hasn't been very much room to raise prices. So for some companies, actually, and for quite a lot of companies, a little bit of inflation is not a bad thing. And it allows you to upgrade revenue. And for some companies, that will mean that you can offset some of the costs. So that's also helping, you know, the aggregate level. And then the companies that so far are warning, you know, are not big parts of, you know, of the market necessarily.
I think another noticeable weight in your portfolio allocation is the healthcare sector. And I think last time I checked, from your top 10, I think 4 were within the healthcare. Is this because of the sector's defensive characteristics or finding some opportunities in there that you don't think are very accurately priced at the moment?
So Andrew, what we look for are companies where we think the future returns and kind of sustainability of the business in terms of its ability to continue for a long time and exist are underappreciated. And I would say last year, the pharmaceutical sector was one of those sectors. So people got worried that there'd be drug pricing reforms in the US. And they also got worried from a technical point of view that rising interest rates would cause defensive stocks to fall. So you saw this kind of confluence of events where the pharmaceutical sector got very, very cheap, despite the fact it had just proven to us all that it had a value, that it was able to come up with innovative drugs and that all this R&D was useful to us. Yeah. So for us, that was an interesting confluence of events where they had, you know, high dividends. The outlook looked better perhaps than it had done in the past. There was a value to them because of technical factors in the market. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, they make high margins. They don't get particularly impacted by the supply chains. So, you know, they don't use semiconductor chips massively. They don't have their cargo caught in, you know, queues of cargo ships off LA. And so it was an interesting confluence of events, really, that meant that they, you know, for specific stocks, there was quite interesting time to invest.
Let's say we're heading into a recession. Now, that might impact different subsectors within that market. So what could a recession mean for pharma or biotech stocks, for example?
You know, the interesting thing is for pharma and biotech stocks, you know, almost nothing could have been worse than COVID. So actually, really, the biggest problem that they had during COVID was that people were not going into hospital and people were not getting hip replacements. They were not getting knee replacements. They were not getting tested, sadly, for cancer. And so when you read now about the backlogs, that's outside of the economic cycle. There was a period 2 years ago when one of the reasons these companies at the time had earnings downgrades was because no one was going to use their product.
Yeah.
And that, so actually they're not very cyclical in an economic way. And we might see a little bit of cyclicality around elective procedures. So, you know, if you're paying for your own operation, you might reduce that. But actually for the mainstream areas, there's still quite a big backlog around the world of people who haven't been treated, very sadly, for what they didn't get treated for in the COVID period. So, you know, I think we have to remember that for most companies, nothing can be as bad as that COVID period of nothing happening, no activity. So when we, you know, in our view, there are still sectors that, you know, they won't see that much cyclicality. But in our minds, we kind of think of that period about how cyclical they might be.
I mean, I think one of the things that happens in a volatile market, for example, is that some investors forget how cyclical things can be. For example, in 2020, I think energy stocks were down around 50%, whilst the S&P and NASDAQ were up about 50 and 150% respectively. Now, those tables basically have turned. Now, for investors or shareholders who've never experienced this level of volatility, what lessons can they learn from history about investing in such an environment?
Yeah, really interesting kind of thinking about what history tells us. And one thing is, you know, staying invested is important. So really the worst mistake that many investors and many of us professionally and personally do is, you know, buy at the top and sell at the bottom. And so the thing to remember, you know, at this point in time is that 6 months ago, you know, we didn't know the war was going to happen, and we didn't know interest rates were going to go up, and to the extent that they were, that inflation would be this high. And now we know that, and so the market has reacted. So that, to some extent, is priced in. I think the other thing that we often find and underestimate is our ability to predict trends. You know, we overestimate our ability to kind of choose a trend, and we overinvest in that trend, and we forget to diversify. So we underestimate the importance of diversification into things that are different. So, for example, investing very heavily in the stay-at-home trend and the behaviors that changed within society when the pandemic came led people to think that areas like, say, Peloton or Zoom and Amazon and these things were the only ways that we were going to live our lives in the future, and that those sales could be extrapolated for a long period of time. And those companies all still exist. They're all still great companies, and we all still use their products, but they got overstretched. Yeah. And at the same time, companies like pharmaceuticals and oil got oversold because people weren't thinking about them. So diversification is key. Staying invested is also key. And companies that can survive through and adapt through the cycle is also important. So I'd say free cash flow is important. So that, for us, dividends do two things. One, when the market has fallen, they keep you investing. So if you reinvest your dividends, or they just give you a return while you're waiting, so you get paid to wait. And then the other thing is, dividends generally are paid by companies that have sufficient cash flow. And so, again, they don't have financing problems, and you don't find that they go bust on you. And so that's the thing I'd say, you know, people need to stay invested, but, you know, keep an eye on the financial security of their companies.
Given that markets are forward looking, do you think that global markets have fully priced in the risk of a recession? And how does that impact the outlook for dividends?
I think the easier one is to predict the outlook for dividends. So what we find over time and over long periods of time is that dividends in general in the market level are far less volatile than earnings or the markets. So they tended to have grown at about 6% a year for a long period of time. And then they, you know, even in the crisis, so even in 2020 in the pandemic, our dividend index, which tracks these things, I think we saw a 10% fall. So that was in a period where economic activity stopped. Yeah. So we're not too worried about the overall, you know, dividend trends for companies, because you have to remember, you know, a vast number of companies in the markets are not that cyclical. So these pharmaceutical companies we mentioned, the consumer staples companies, a lot of companies out there are not very cyclical. So actually they won't be affected. In terms of pricing in a recession, it's almost always impossible to tell whether a recession is priced in. I think we can say the price to earnings multiples and the other types of valuations like that have come down considerably. We haven't yet seen the earnings falls being priced into the market. I think it hinges on two things at the moment. One of them is the war in Russia, with Russia and Ukraine. And so, you know, if we get some sort of halt in that, I think we'd be feeling very different about the world. And that the depth of the recession could be lower, particularly for Europe, particularly if there wasn't energy rationing. And the other part is China and COVID. So the one thing we haven't spoken of yet, Andrew, is the fact that China has been locked down for much longer than we all thought might happen with COVID. And that's another big driver, I think, over the next 6 to 12 months about how deep any recession might be. So we're all focused on the Fed, but actually, you know, the Fed's ability to maneuver, so that, you know, the central bank's ability to maneuver, it's partly a product of inflation. The inflation is partly being driven by the war and China. And I think if we could get one of those two things easing off, we would feel, you know, much more optimistic about life, and that it would be a relatively mild situation. So I guess it's a long way of saying, you know, the die is not cast yet. Yeah. And we'll see where we go over the summer.
Okay. Finishing off at the portfolio level, what are you hearing from your portfolio companies about dividends at the moment?
Still very strong. So just in the last few weeks, we've had a number of financial institutions report. So that's relevant because they're the kind of company that you would worry about. They have high capital levels. We've seen an increase there, to your question earlier, in buybacks. So they're seeing they generally still have excess capital. We're seeing the resource companies, so oil and gas and the commodity companies, have seen very high commodity prices. So they have been increasing dividends. So actually these areas, and meanwhile, you know, the more stable parts of economies have just carried on as normal, kind of with the pharmaceutical companies, consumer staples companies. So, you know, touch wood, and we've not seen any impact on dividends whatsoever. And the growth this year has actually been higher than we expected.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's all we have time for today, Ben. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find this interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes.
Important information, not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. This is a marketing communication. Please refer to the AIFMD disclosure document and the annual reports of the AIF before making any final investment decisions. Past performance does not predict future returns. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount you originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this podcast is intended to or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. We may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for the regulatory record keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Henderson Investors International Limited. Reg number 359-4615. Janus Henderson Investors UK Limited. Reg number 906355. Janus Henderson Fund Management UK Limited. Reg number 2678531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited, Reg number 2606646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate in London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. And Henderson Management S.A, Reg number B22848. At 2 Rue de Bitbourg, L1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson. Knowledge Shared and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.
Recession. A recession is a significant, widespread, and prolonged downturn in economic activity. Because recessions often last 6 months or more, one popular rule of thumb is that two consecutive quarters of decline in a country's gross domestic product, GDP, constitute a recession. Cyclical stock. A cyclical stock is a stock that's price is affected by macroeconomic or systematic changes in the overall economy. Cyclical stocks are known for following the cycles of an economy through expansion, peak, recession, and recovery. Inflation, the rate at which the prices of goods and services are rising in an economy. The CPI and RPI are two common measures. Price-to-earnings ratio, PE, a popular ratio used to value a company's shares, compared to other stocks, or a benchmark index. It is calculated by dividing the current share price by its earnings per share. Free cash flow, FCF, free cash flow represents the cash a company generates after accounting for cash outflows to support operations and maintain its capital assets. Unlike earnings or net income, free cash flow is a measure of profitability that excludes the non-cash expenses of the income statement and includes spending on equipment and assets as well as changes in working capital from the balance sheet. Multiple. A multiple measures some aspect of a company's financial well-being, determined by dividing one metric by another metric. Metrics are quantitative tools that measure a company's performance. The metric in the numerator is typically larger than the one in the denominator. Investors use multiples to quantify a company's growth, productivity, and efficiency. They use multiples to make comparisons among companies and find the best investment opportunities. Diversification, a way of spreading risk by mixing different types of assets/asset classes in a portfolio. It is based on the assumption that the prices of the different assets will behave differently in a given scenario. Assets with low correlation should provide the most diversification. Volatility, the rate and extent at which the price of a portfolio, security, or index, moves up and down. If the price swings up and down with large movements, it has high volatility. If the price moves more slowly and to a lesser extent, it has lower volatility. Higher volatility means the higher the risk of the investment. Gearing. Gearing is the measure of a company's debt level. It is also the relationship between a company's leverage, showing how far its operations are funded by lenders versus shareholders. Within investment trusts, it refers to how much money the trust borrows for investment purposes.